Today on Straight Talk Africa, an estimated 5 million Burundians are expected to vote yes or no on major constitutional changes. International human rights groups say the political playing field is not level because the process is flawed. But the government says tomorrow's referendum is taking place in a free, fair, and transparent atmosphere. That's coming up next right here on Straight Talk Africa. Hello, welcome to Straight Talk Africa, live from the Voice of America headquarters here in Washington. I am Shaka Sali.
And hello to all of our viewers and listeners on the continent and elsewhere. I'm Haydee Adams-Fitzpatrick, and I will be your social media reporter.
Today, it's a discussion and analysis of the upcoming referendum in Burundi.
And coming up later, our audience has, of course, weighed in on our topic through emails, Facebook and Twitter comments. We'll reveal some of them just ahead here on Straight Talk Africa.
Constitutional change often is essential to a thriving democracy. But some believe that it can also be used to impede the will of the people. My colleague Paul Sisco has more.
The campaigns for Burundi's May 17th constitutional amendment referendum closed Monday, with both the yes and no camps holding their final rallies amidst rising tensions. The controversial part of the referendum vote to be amended on is on presidential term limits that could see President Pierre Nkurunziza's rule extended for at least a decade. Human rights groups say they don't think the vote will take place in a free and fair climate, and there have been sporadic incidents of violence and abductions ever since President Nkurunziza indicated his plans to seek re-election. His assurances that the vote will be free and fair have mostly fallen on deaf ears. He tells his supporters, you should listen to those who'll tell you to vote yes, and if there are those who tell you to vote no, listen to them as well. Only you know what's in your heart. Burundi has been gripped by political crisis since he first announced he'd stand for a third term, which the opposition says violates the constitution, as well as the 2005 peace deal ending Burundi's devastating civil war. He won the previous presidential vote, largely boycotted by the opposition, handily. Protests followed, igniting a government crackdown that killed more than 700 people and displaced over 400,000 Burundian citizens to neighboring countries, leaving the economy in desperate straits. Opposition leader and deputy speaker in parliament, Agathon Rwasa, campaigning for a no vote on the constitutional term limit change, has been urging his supporters to come out in numbers, telling them, when you're inside the voting booth, what you vote for is your secret. Specifically, the referendum will decide whether to amend the constitution to extend term limits to 7 years from five. The proposed changes, if passed, will limit the president to two consecutive terms, but would not take into account previous terms, potentially extending his rule to 2034. Critics say the presidential move is a likely step towards Nkurunziza seeking a life presidency. More than 5 million Burundians are expected to vote on May 17th. Paul Sisco, VOA News, Washington.
Thanks, Paul, for that interesting report. For the latest on Thursday's referendum, let's go to reporter Mohamed Yusuf, who joins us by telephone from the Burundian capital, Bujumbura. Good evening, Mohamed.
Good evening, Brother Shaka.
How are you?
Not bad. How are you?
I am terrific. Talk to us about the mood. What is the mood like in Bujumbura from your vantage point?
Yeah, today was a very calm day. I'm at the moment in the capital, so I'll speak of the capital. It was a very calm place. People were peaceful. People were going about their daily activities, and there was a normal traffic, and there were no any political activities that was done on Monday. So people are just waiting to vote. So far, it's been a very calm day, and Burundians are preparing to go to vote tomorrow, whether they want to change the constitution or not.
When you talk to some of them, and I'm sure you have interacted with lots of them, what sense do you really get? Do you get the sense that here are people, you are talking about people who have the freedom to express themselves one way or the other?
We attended, especially we attended one big rally on Monday held by the ruling party CNDD FDD. People were enthusiastic. People were having fun. They were in party colors, singing and dancing. But when you try to speak and tell people, can you tell me your mood? What are you going to do? Are you happy? Are you going to vote? People are so reluctant to speak, and people will just walk away from you. And not only that person you wanted to speak, but people will walk away from you. And it means people, even 20, 30 people will run away from you. In the streets is the same. People are not willing to speak. They can't even tell you that I'm going to vote. Simple as that. It's not really easy. It's really hard place for Bruneians people actually to speak so far what we have witnessed for the few days we were here.
Now, Mohammed, I know that you've been around for about a week. Have you had the opportunity to interact with members of the opposition? And if you did, what is your reaction?
Yeah, I met the former presidential candidate, Agathon Rwasa, who has been leading this big campaign, the No campaign. And he was telling me, look, we moved around and we were telling people not to vote no, because we think this is just all about one-man show. This is just one-party show. It doesn't have any interest. It does not have any interest or for the people. And you, when we speak to it, quite looked like someone really disturbed what was going on. And he was not happy with what the ruling party was trying to do. Because you can imagine he's the only big guy here now who is campaigning against that. Presumably everyone else left. Now they're in neighboring countries, even some in Europe. And you can see that, and that environment is no longer the environment we were in 2015, where at least there were some opposition politicians in the country. Now there are none. Only person, maybe the big figure, is Agathon Rwasa. I know he's all by himself, and he was telling us how even people were not willing to participate with him or give him cars to transport his supporters or to transport his team. It was a really difficult environment for him also to operate. But he told us that he had to do that, and he hoped that come Thursday, tomorrow, that they will carry the day.
What about allegations with some of the government's critics, and these are Burundians actually here in the diaspora, who allege that Rwasa is in fact, in their words, not mine, not a member of the opposition, that is simply a ploy. He is an ally of President Pierre Nkurunziza.
That is, it's really, really hard question to answer. But what we've seen, and we will just see, we'll just talk what we have seen so far. Maybe that is what is going on. But at the same time, he clearly came out. He kind of hold all these big rallies and campaigning against the constitutional changes. By the view of it, that is what we have seen so far. I think what other Burundians outside the country think maybe something, a different thing altogether. But at the same time, we can only speak of what we have seen. And I think this is something, it's another debate that people will debate in the coming days, weeks, or months to come. But for us, we only speak of what we have seen. And we've seen he's been the only figure who has been telling people to vote no. And he kind of enjoyed freedom, of course, compared to other people who have left. So that also raises question, which you can see why people are raising those questions. But again, he kind of enjoyed freedom compared to other politicians. But so far, we will only say that he's been the only guy running around and campaigning against that constitution.
Talking about what you can see, what you have been able to see, do you get the sense or have you seen somewhere that the government is intimidating people?
Yeah, we've seen situations where some people are willing to talk to you, but they will look around and there will be some finger pointing, and that person will walk away from you. But when you ask around, they will tell you, look, I'm sorry, I can't talk to you. Why? Because some of the youth, the ruling party youth wing, around us, and it's really difficult for me to talk to you, but I wish to talk to you. So we've seen that those kind of situations where it's been really difficult for people to speak and people looking around. There were kind of intimidations going on. We could see that. Generally, people will tell you this is something that has been going on. It's something day to day. It's not only this referendum. It's been going on the last 2 or 3 years. And that has also been documented by human rights organizations in the country for the few who have been here and the ones who are outside.
Talking about human rights organizations, in fact, some human rights organizations and some critics of the government are on record saying that we are not really expecting a sort of referendum of sorts, that tomorrow is not really a referendum. In their words again, not mine, that we are looking at a constitutional coup.
Yeah, of course. We'll talk of people who we've been talking to on the ground. One thing that is really strange about this thing is I have not seen a single person who openly told me that he was going to vote yes or no. And that tells you a lot about the environment that this whole referendum is being conducted. But having said that, at the same time, we've met people telling you this: there's nothing that is not talking about us. It's talking about political system. It's all about politics. It's not about us. And when you gauge that, then clearly you can see where that person is going with this, if he's going to vote tomorrow. But again, Burundians, again, will go and vote, and everyone will decide what either way, whether they're going to vote yes or no. But again, it's very hard to tell because of the environment we are at the moment. And I think by listening to what human rights, the concerns they're raising, some of them are really, really genuine concerns. And even these concerns were also being raised by the Agathon Rwasa, that guy who has been campaigning against this constitution. But again, we'll see when we get there, and that will be tomorrow, then we'll see if people are actually free to do that. And then maybe we can talk more on that.
The government says that the atmosphere, in their words, is conducive for people really to express the way they feel about the referendum tomorrow. Do you get any sense of that? Any evidence on the ground?
For the few days we've been here, I don't think that's a right statement. That is a correct statement, to be honest. When people are dancing to the ruling party songs and tunes, and at the same time, no one of them, even in that campaign rally, can say, I'm going to vote yes. Even that person who is there, then that tells you a different story altogether. The environment, people have been so reluctant to speak, and people are not easy to speak. People don't want to speak. People want to speak tomorrow when they get to that booth, whether they're going to tick yes or no. But so far on the ground, people are not willing to talk, and people are keeping most of the things closer to themselves. And that's why it's really hard to tell which way this will go, because if you could find 10 people, 8 people telling you yes or no, you could understand. But people are not talking, and I think tomorrow they will talk when they get that paper.
You know, of course, as well as I do, that the Voice of America and the BBC broadcasts have actually been blocked by the government. What about the fact that you happen to be a member of the Voice of America and you are actually reporting live from the Burundian capital, Bujumbura, and no one seems really to be intimidating you?
Well, I don't know if Burundian can listen to me, because this morning someone was telling me, you guys are still off air. And, of course, I don't think they can listen. Maybe in border areas in Tanzania, maybe parts of Rwanda, yes. But within the country, no. But again, I myself on the ground as a journalist, I got accreditation. But I've really find a bit of... it's been some difficult to operate here. For example, on Sunday, we went in the outskirts of the capital, Bujumbura, where the ruling party, they were holding a political rally. And when we got there, we showed them our accreditation. They said, no, you can't film, wait. And they told us, you can now film when everyone is gone. And that is the only permission they gave us. And when we say, okay, fine, then we decided to collect a few people, and they say, you can't talk to them. And the final rally, when we got there and we introduced ourselves, for example, myself, Mohammed Yusuf, I'm with Voice of America, the guys, they were not really that friendly, so to speak. But again, they were happy to see us, but again, they were not really, really wanted to talk to Voice of America. I think there's that agreement within the ruling party not to speak to us, but which is okay. I think so far we've been, as a person, I've been free to move around, even though there have been some difficulties and people maybe from the government talking to us. But generally, it's been a good environment to operate in as a journalist.
So if I had you...
a good environment.
If I heard you correctly, are you saying that so far you have not been able to get an opportunity to interview a Burundian government official for the record?
I only got one, and that was a communication person of the ruling CNDD-FDD, the ruling party, but not the people that I would expect to speak to. For example, the president advisor, he spoke to me so many times, even when we were operating from the East Africa Bureau in Nairobi. But this time around, he seems to be really, really reluctant to speak. I was trying also to speak to the President Nkurunziza, a spokesperson, and he kind of told me, I'm sorry, I'm not allowed to talk to you. And that's when the communication person took charge. But compared to that, the two people, the person that I've met and the person who gave me interview, is a bit different. But again, we only got people in the party to talk to us, but not in the government, people we thought maybe the president spokesperson and the president advisor, who have been always free to talk to us, even far away from Burundi. When I was operating from Nairobi, they were always free to talk to us, but not this time around.
What about people from the Electoral Commission?
The Electoral Commission, we tried to reach them, but they kind of also said maybe it's not the right time to talk. So far, I think I saw some of them within the city, but they say we were just going around doing our business as usual, but trying to make sure everyone have their document or voter register, voter's card so far, but not really, really willing to talk. And that's the kind of environment we are in Burundi so far. But again, tomorrow is the big day. I think then we'll see what happens tomorrow. But so far, generally, fairly, it's been a very good environment to operate for me as a journalist.
Final question. I know that you covered the last election back in 2015. When you compare and contrast then and now, what do you get?
Absolutely different. This is a totally different Burundi. That I was there pre-election when there was protest. I was election day. I came back after post-election, took up after 2 or 3 months. It was environment was very, very different. And people were free to talk. People were free to share, to tell their stories. But now, I mean, I feel like I'm in a different country, not Burundi. But again, you realize you are in Burundi, and this is how the situation is, and you have to accept that a lot has changed in the last 3 years. Because when you talk of all these people fleeing the country, almost 400,000 to 500,000 people left the country. All politicians, the opposition, have left, and people getting killed, getting arrested. You have all these planted youths, ruling party youths in the streets. You can imagine the kind of fear people do have. But again, some of them are really optimistic and hopeful that Burundi will be different again, and they will be in a different environment in 2-3 years to come. The Catholic bishops have also called on people to be peaceful, to go ahead. Of course, they didn't want this referendum, but they're saying, I think we'll fight another day. We'll look at other means to make Burundi democratic. Whatever is going to happen will happen on Thursday. But again, we will change with time, and we'll fight for a stable and democratic Burundi.
Thank you very much, Mohammed, for your insight, and take care of yourself.
Thank you very much.
You're most welcome. Joining us here in the studio is my colleague, Frederick Nkundikije, Managing Editor of VOA's Central Africa Service. I have to say that I'm profoundly honored and exceedingly humbled to have the opportunity to host you, Frederick.
Thank you, Shaka. Thank you for inviting me.
You're most welcome. And Leonard Nyangoma, Chairman of the Opposition National Council for the Defense of Democracy, or CNDD, joins me by phone from Lille in France. Well,
yes.
I'm very much, I have to say frankly that I'm equally and profoundly honored and exceedingly humbled to have the opportunity to host you for the first time on Straight Talk Africa, Mr. Nyangoma.
Hello? Yes, sir. You say?
I am very, very profoundly honored and exceedingly humbled to have the opportunity to host you for the first time on Straight Talk Africa.
Yes, I remember.
And you know, the last time I actually interviewed you was back in 1997 in the Kenyan capital, Nairobi. And you seem to be very, very close to Bujumbura, but you seem to be very, very far now in Europe.
Yes, I am very far. I am a refugee in Europe.
I see.
This is the two time or three time for me to be refugees.
Very interesting. Very interesting. Yeah.
10 months of refugee and 2010 again.
Welcome.
I'm here from 2011.
We'll come to that later.
We would like to say
on a programming note that we reached out to multiple Burundian government officials for their participation in today's show, but they never responded. Later in the program, we'll give our audience a chance to call in with your question or comment. The number to call is 202-619-3111, and the US country code is 1. Let me come to you immediately, Frederick. You obviously had my interaction with Muhammad Yusuf, our own reporter on the ground in the capital, Bujumbura. Your reaction?
I guess Muhammad said so many things that are true. There have been reports of intimidation, especially carried out by what they call Imbonerakure, young people, the youth affiliated with the ruling party. But again, when you talk to government officials, because we have really, you know, tried to press them on that, they would say those were rather isolated cases. But obviously, Wasa has come on our show many times, and his, you know, members of his party, they actually allege that during the campaign they were, you know, intimidated.
Yes, the government, of course, can tell you whatever they want to tell you, but do you find that sometimes there is a relationship between what they actually tell you, what they say, and actually what is happening on the ground?
It is somehow difficult to really know when you are far away because, you know, in Burundi, obviously, it depends on who you talk to. If you talk to the opposition, they're going to tell you bad things, very bad things about the government, and it's going to be the same for the government. Mm. The best way is really to be on the ground and talk to people. But obviously, we have stringers all over, and we have been getting such reports.
Very interesting. Mr. Nyangoma, are you there?
Yes, I'm still there.
Did you listen to my conversation with Muhammad Yusuf, who is based in Bujumbura?
Yes, I had the conversation by Yusuf from Bujumbura.
Are you surprised?
Yeah.
Are you surprised by what he said or what he was saying?
Not so surprised what he was talking about. He was saying about the reality situation in Bujumbura, in Burundi, around the so-called referendum. But For me, this is not a referendum. It is a joking to help Nkurunziza, to make Nkurunziza president of the life. And even to become, in a few years, a king of Burundi. Vitim said the referendum is an electoral masquerade, which neither Burundi people nor the international community will never recognize, because it's illegal and illegally organized by a self-proclaimed illegal institution since 2015. So we understand in opposition that there is no eternal law, even the constitution, but the constitution is not a law like the others. It is a source of other laws. Burundi constitution is also an emanation of the Arusha Agreement for Peace and Reconciliation. This agreement, negotiated over 2 years, I think one day, Chaka, you participated in such a negotiation also. This agreement has restored the confidence between the various companies in the Burundi people, and thus stabilizing the country. The modification of such fundamental law requires the consent of different political and civil actors. We cannot ignore the political crisis that undermines Burundi mainly since 2015, when Nkurunziza crossed the red line with the legal term. The Nkurunziza system reinforced political crisis. I think the crisis started with when Nkurunziza took power from 2005. We know, because CNDD is a dissident from CNDD. Thus, since 2015, there have been more 2,000 innocent deaths, with many others missing or kidnapped. More than 8,000 political prisoners. Almost 500,000 refugees. You know, a climate of terror created and maintained by the regime through its Imbonerakure militia and other security organs, especially the National Intelligence Service. Now, it is not the moment of constitution revision. It was a time for dialogue to create a climate of appeasement in the country.
I see.
By releasing all political prisoners, by disarming the Imbonerakure militia.
I see. Now, Mr. Nyangoma, yes. Someone will tell you that a constitution is not really carved out of a stone. It is a living document, and therefore it can actually be amended. In this particular case, Mr. Pierre Nkurunziza is not setting any precedent. If you look at around the Great Lakes region, you'll be aware that the constitution was amended, term limits were lifted. In Rwanda, which is a neighboring country, term limits have been lifted. In Uganda, even age limits, which is also in the general region. These are countries which are part of the East African community. So what is the problem with the people of Burundi?
Yes, I understand you. In many countries in Africa, the government used to change constitution to help a leader or president to stay in power for a long time, you know. So I think we cannot compare the situation in Burundi and in other countries. We have a special situation in Burundi. Also, we cannot justify a violation of the law in our country by another violation in the law elsewhere. That is not a justification.
I see.
Yes.
Well, you are tuned into Straight Talk Africa. We'll have more of a discussion in a moment, including our social media segment. So please, don't go away, because we'll be right back with you.
The lyrics could be French,
English,
English,
Portuguese,
Bantu,
Arabic.
It is the beat.
The African beat that counts.
The beat does all the translations.
It cuts across all languages and gives us the understanding that this is the African beat.
It is so distinct
and adhesive.
It binds us together.
African beat on the Voice of America. For more information, visit our website at www.voanews.com/African Beat.
This is Straight Talk Africa on the Voice of America. Call us now with your questions and comments. The number is 202-619-3111 and the U.S. country code is 1. Call us direct and we'll call you right back. Remember to turn down the volume on your radio or television and keep your comments brief. Now back to Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you very much, Esther Gidu Ewart, and of course, welcome back to Straight Talk Africa, live from Washington. It's time to bring in our social media reporter, Heidi Adams Fitzpatrick. Take it away, Heidi.
Thank you very much, Shaka. Now, as Burundi prepares for a referendum to decide whether or not to extend President Pierre Nkurunziza's time in office, the democratically challenged nation has battled allegations of violence, intimidation and harassment committed against perceived opponents of the referendum. And so this leads us to our question of the week, in which we asked, how do you feel about Burundians possibly changing their constitution to extend President Pierre Nkurunziza's time in office? And so we'll kick things off here with a tweet from the group I Burundi, and they write, the issue is not changing Burundi's constitution, because constitutions can be changed. The issue right now is the disregard of existing laws, that's Article 299 of the current constitution, and the violation of the Arusha Peace Accord. We have another tweet from Vincent Harris, who says, what matters most is to discourage violence and contain this mess. There is very little the international community can do without regional resolve. And let's go to our Facebook comment of the week from Facebook fan Omanua Okuhugba, who writes, I have mixed feelings about the possible change of Burundi's constitution. It will be a joyful event if it's changed to secure the best interests of Burundians both at home and in the diaspora. However, if the change is to merely prolong the stay of an individual in the state house, then the nightmare of the African continent is simply being extended and aggravated. Let's go here to another comment from Facebook fan Wuma Precious, who writes, isn't the beauty of having a constitution premised on such documents not being subjected to the whims of a single person or collection of oligarchs? If Burundians think their constitution will serve them better by being changed to fit one man, it's their prerogative. Good luck to them. And our last Facebook comment comes from Martin Kananura, who writes, I think the constitution was formulated by the people, but it's being abused by a few of the people. If Pierre Nkurunziza succeeds in getting the constitution changed, then he's doing what Uganda and Rwanda did. So I'm not surprised. And of course, a reminder for you that we do appreciate all of our audience feedback. If you are a new fan, do drop us a line at africatv@voanews.com. And you can comment on our Facebook page. Just enter these keywords, Straight Talk Africa. And be sure to visit us online at voaafrica.com. You can also join our YouTube channel, sign up to VOA TV 2 Africa. And of course, you can follow us on Twitter at VOA Shaka. Straight Talk Africa streams live every Wednesday on Facebook, or simply go to VOA Straight Talk Africa TV program page. That is on our website. And of course, you can watch us live on your mobile device. Download the VOA mobile app. Now let's take a look at what is ahead for next week's program.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, warring factions in South Sudan's civil war are scheduled to begin meeting in Ethiopia on Thursday, May 17th, in an effort to jumpstart the peace process and end a brutal conflict. Despite several agreements and ceasefires, government troops loyal to President Salva Kiir continue to clash with forces loyal to opposition leader Riek Machar. Both sides have been accused of human rights abuses. South Sudan in crisis. On the next Straight Talk Africa.
And that is all for today's social media segment. Shaka, you and your guests, of course, have a lot of social media comments to discuss, so I'm going to give it back to you.
Indeed. Thank you so much, Heidi. And today we are discussing the upcoming referendum in Burundi. guess my colleague Frederick Nkundikije of VOA Central Africa Service and Leonard Nyangoma, chairman of the Opposition National Council for the Defense of Democracy, or CNDD, who joins us by telephone from Lille, France. Well, I have to say again, gentlemen, that I'm profoundly honored and exceedingly humbled to have the opportunity to host the two of you on Straight Talk Africa.
Likewise.
You're most welcome. We reached out to multiple Burundian government officials for their participation in today's show, but they never responded to our request. Let me come to you immediately. From what we have talked about, do you still consider this very important Burundian document a constitution, or is it in fact in the process of turning into what some would call a personal manifesto for President Pierre Nkurunziza?
Well, it's somehow hard to really tell because, you know, remember when they were talking about Arusha codes, when they were talking about the constitution, at the time, there were so many political parties which were against those documents. Today, they seem to rather be supportive of the current constitution. Obviously, there are some provisions in the constitution that are of a certain concern to many Burundians. We talked about term limits,
yes.
Two term limits of 7 years, that is 14 years for somebody to be on the helm of the country for 14 years. Personally, I think it's too much.
And it is not retroactive.
Yes.
In other words, it does not affect the incumbent president.
Yes.
It basically begins on a new slate.
Yeah, we had an interview with one of the officials right at the beginning, and he was adamant, saying that the president has never declared he is going to run. He referred me to something that was declared in early 2015, where the president and his spokesperson, I guess I was in one of the shows here, when his spokesperson said, president will never run for a third term. Maybe things have changed in the meantime. It could be.
But what about the fact that his own party, the CNDD, FDD, actually has characterized him as a very unique individual who happens to have a monopoly on the vision thing? This is nothing new because there is another important player in the region, Ugandan President Yoweri Museveni, who previously also said that he was the only man, the only person, as a matter of fact, to be fair in terms of gender, who had the vision thing. He's the only one who can think properly for where the country should go. The role of the rest of the people, whether they are subjects or citizens, is to implement his vision.
That is something that was said by a member of his political party. I'm sure there are so many politicians in Burundi who do not really have the, who cannot back that idea. There are so many people who say, you know, we have so many visionary leaders in other parties. I don't know.
But let's talk about what is at stake, really. Tell us, what is at stake? It's not simply opening the term limits. No, it's more than that. Tell us, what is at stake?
There are so many things at stake, really. There are so many provisions that, that could deter anybody, any politicians, anybody who has, good intentions to aspire to the high office. For example, they say that one of the provisions says that a person who has a dual citizenship cannot hold a high office. That is scary for so many Burundians.
Really?
Yes.
What about the veto power? Because, for example, I was doing a little bit of homework and I discovered that your parliament is essentially going to become a rubber stamp type of institution. Because, yes, it can make laws, it can pass bills into law, but in order for that bill to turn into law, it had to be assented to by the president. And the president has 30 days in which he has either to do that And if he does not, it does not become law. And it is a veto that cannot be overridden.
Yeah, I'm not aware of that provision, but, you know, in all the countries, a bill is ratified by the parliament or the Congress, and then goes to the president, who can really sign it into a law.
But in this particular case, in the United States, for example, the president's veto can actually be overridden.
Yeah, that is true. Yeah, I'm not sure how it's going to work, but again, this is something to, you know, we have to wait and see. First of all, according to the reports we heard, you know, with Mohamed, so many people are not saying how they're going to vote tomorrow. I was talking to two individuals who had, you know, who are the heads of two civil society groups. One of them has a group called PRASEM. He said, you're going to be surprised tomorrow. I mean, people may vote no. And when I talked to another guy who's the chairman of ONELOP, he said the ruling party is going to win with more than 90%.
Now, Frederick, you are a journalist, an international journalist after that. You've been covering a lot of these processes and all that kind of stuff. Are you really concerned about the fact that people may not actually go to vote? Because, yes, they may not go to vote. I'm not saying that this is particularly so in Burundi, but I have seen situations, my friend, where the results of a referendum or the results of an election are not necessarily reflections of the will of the people who actually cast their ballot. They are rather a reflection of who counted the votes or who announced the results.
That can happen in countries where you have like strong political parties, which is not the case in Burundi, really. If, for all those people who know Burundi, I can give you an example of a professor who conducted a poll right a few months before the election, the crisis in Burundi. That was in May. It was on January 15th, 2015. His name is Christophe Sebudandi. He's a university professor. He used to be my colleague when I was at the University of Burundi. He, in his poll, he had found out that if elections had to take place then, the ruling party would have gotten more than 50%, 52%. The other parties, like Rwasa, Amizero Barundi, Uprona, and MSD combined, they would have like 2%. This is a guy who lives in exile now, which means he was not really on the side of the government.
Okay.
But he works with another pollster called Afrobarometer, and his organization is called Gradis. It's you know, they work together.
Okay.
So this was like a scientific poll, which means, again, as Mohamed said, in Burundi, apart from Amizero ya Barundi, other political parties are not really seen on the ground. And we have more than 36 political parties.
To what extent is the Electoral Commission, in your view, independent in Burundi?
I personally know the chairman, Pierre Claver, d'Aïchalier.
Who appointed him?
The government, I believe, or the president. But he's a special individual. He's really one of the rare Burundians who can be independent. But obviously, we don't know, you know, how much leverage the government has on him. But I know him personally. He's really, and this is a guy who has even won the trust of so many international observers.
Mr. Nyangoma, what about you? Do you expect tomorrow's referendum to be credible in the sense that it will be free, fair, transparent, and verifiable?
You know, Chakasari, as I told you in the beginning, I don't believe in this referendum. I told you that it's a joke to help Kuruziza to become president of life. And even king, a generation of new king, Kuruziza 1, Kuruziza 2, and so on. So I cannot answer to your question because I don't believe on such in such masquerade, electoral masquerade. Because the modification of such law, like constitutions, it is a fundamental law. They have to be to make a national consensus. Now, there is no consensus to modify this constitution. To reach a consensus, we have to return on the negotiation table to negotiate. Firstly, the priority now is a climate of peace, a climate of appeasement, not a period of elections. Nkurunziza have first to release all political prisoners. He has to disarm Imbonerakure militia. How do you think that election can be credible when militia of the ruling part are intimidating the population anywhere in the country? So we need dialogue, and we need to set up mission institution for restoring a climate of trust in the country, restoring security through Burundi territory, rebuilding the social and economic tissue, preparing and organizing free, honest, and transparent elections. It will be possible in the future, but not now.
Now, we have had reports, for example, that they are probably not going to be really international observers on the ground or regional observers, because the last time I checked, the East African community said it would not be able to observe the elections, and they used some very interesting excuse that they don't seem to have a budget for that.
Yes, I think international community like in your African Union, even East Africa and UN, they don't believe in such process. They don't believe in this process of elections. And I believe in the Burundi people. Burundi people who had kept courage and who continue to resist despite the regime ferocity. The Burundian people for a long time has always overcome fear. Burundi people fought against slaves and defeated them, and at the end of 19th century. So I think Nkurunziza in a short time, but he will not resist against Burundi pressure. I'm sure.
Mr. Nyangoma, when you say that you do not think that organizations such as the African Union will endorse tomorrow's referendum, if, of course, it comes out in favor of incumbent president Pierre Nkurunziza, a man whose last name, by the way, means that he basically reflects good news. Isn't that correct? What about the fact that that same institution and other regional institutions basically end up endorsing those types of referendums in Rwanda, in Uganda, elections in Egypt, in Cameroon, in Equatorial Guinea? What about that?
I told you, I already said that we cannot justify in a bill with another bill or a violation of the law in our country by another violation of law elsewhere. That is not an argument. And the situation, the social situation, political situation in Burundi is different from the situation in other countries. So Burundi people need peace and need a really democracy. We struggle. We fight. We fought for democracy from 1993, before 1993. So it is the reason the Burundi people cannot accept a dictator. They cannot accept a dictator like Nkurunziza for a long time. We fought military dictator, we fought other dictator, and I think Nkurunziza will not able to resist. It is the reason I advise him to come back to the table of negotiations to make peace together and to rebuild our country. You know, Burundi now is ranked among the 10 most corrupt countries in the world, among the most hungry countries in the world. More than 60% of the population lives below the poverty line. Unemployment affects more than 65% of adult population. Shortly, Burundi has become an open prison.
Now, let me ask you this question, Mr. Nyangoma. You happen to come from Bururi, which is the southern part of the country, if I remember correctly. Is that correct?
Yes.
And it so happens that the people of Bururi were in control of the country for about 4 decades. Do you see any difference between...
What then?
It used to be that the people who were in who were in charge of the country came from Bururi, where you also happen to come from.
Yes,
we're talking about, for example, the Captain Michel Michombero, who overthrew King Mwambutsa, I think. And then, of course, you have Colonel Batista Bagaza. And then you had Major Pierre Buyoya.
Yes, I know them.
What is the difference between then and now? Of course, you have the power tilting in Tungozi as we talk.
First you have to make a correction. It was not people for Bururi who was controlling the power at that time. It was an oligarchy.
Elements from Bururi. I remember that
many of the oligarchy were from Burundi, but there was also others from other regions of Burundi. So, what the situation? If I compare, it is not easy to compare the situation. But if we compare the situation has moved because of Burundi people, had changed because of Burundi people. Burundi people now, when you try to take their democracy, they refuse regularly, they abusively. So, but I think now the situation, Burundi's situation, is somehow bad, very bad, worse, if you like. You remember under this regime, military regime, people were killing many times, but people were not suffering of hunger, for poverty, like the situation now.
But they were killing. They killed a lot of people. They killed a lot of people, you said, correct?
Yes. A lot of people were killed, and now also a lot of people are killed, and the others are kidnapped, and the others are refugees.
Okay.
So, no, but it is not time also to revenge. No, it has not to be to correct. It has to be time to correct.
Yes,
has been done.
I didn't mean that. Thank you very much. Let me come to you again, of course, Frederica. Yeah, of course, there was a lot of killing under Michombero.
Yes.
A lot of killings under Buyoya.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly not under Bagaza, people will tell you. Correct?
Yeah, you know, Bagaza ruled after, you know, the genocide in 1972, what people call genocide massacres in 1972. And basically, he was ruling unopposed, and his government did not reflect the kind of unity.
He did not provided infrastructure, yeah, roads, and what have you, but example, certainly yes. not united
yeah.
people.
Yeah.
But what about the fact that people will tell you, frankly, that there has probably never been democracy in Burundi? That, in fact, if there is such a democracy, it would have perhaps to be defined as a government of some people, by some people, for some people. Democracy is supposed to be a government of the people, by the people, for the people.
Yes, indeed. I believe we missed a chance in 2010 because there were strong political parties in 2010. But right after the elections, political parties which were really strong, you know, boycotted the vote. They said, we're not going to participate. We're not going to accept the outcome of the elections.
What and about 1993? And Melikio Ndadaye.
That was probably the most democratically elected president.
Because, the first democratically elected president of Burundi.
Yes.
But his crime was because he was elected democratically, and he was killed by his own people.
Because he was elected, it was like a surprise for President Buyoya, who was a president at the time, because everything they were showing on TV, all the campaign, all the rallies, they were showing that the ruling party at the time, UPRONA, had a lot of supporters. But then at the ballot, everything changed. It was like a sudden. And there were people who were not really ready to accept a president from another party or maybe another ethnic group.
Who were those people?
Maybe people who were strong in the army, people, yeah, because you know that there was a coup right after 3 months in the office, he was killed.
What about a man called Colonel Bikomago?
Bikomago was, the defense minister, and according to allegations, I don't know to what extent.
Before he became a defense minister, he was commanding a very major, I think, commando battalion.
Yes, I know there have been so many allegations against him, but
What about my friend Colonel Doctor? Colonel Doctor
Minani?
No, there's this Colonel. What was his name? He was in the army. A very smart guy.
There were so many strong men, during that time. Yeah, I guess it was almost impossible for somebody who did not have like an army. The army was not integrated like it is now. It was somehow, difficult to believe that he was going to stay in office for so many months. I guess he stayed in office only for 3 months. He was elected on June 1st, 1993, and on October somewhere 13th, I guess he was killed.
What about
1993?
Yeah, there are people. Well, I'm sorry to say this, but there are people who say, frankly, that under normal circumstances, that Nkurunziza shouldn't really have a problem because he has apparently a lot of support. Is that true?
Yes, that is what so many people believed. First of all, because Nkurunziza has two
unfortunately,
parents from different
ethnic groups.
Time happened
not to be our best ally.
Yes.
Daradangwa, Colonel Daradangwa, I was looking up for him. On that note, our guests were Frederick Nkurundikije and Leonard Nyangoma. Thanks to our field stations, along with our viewers and listeners. For many of our Voice of America radio affiliates, Learning English is coming up next. And tomorrow morning, it's Daybreak Africa with James Bate. On behalf of the Voice of America, thanks for tuning into Straight Talk Africa. In the meantime, get better, not beat up Burundi. And please remember to keep the African hopes alive.